Wake up, everyone. It's time for a call to action. Welcome to Call to Action Today, where there are no sacred cows, with your host, Steve Noble, just an ordinary man who believes in an extraordinary God, and he's calling you out every week to live the Christian life in your home, your work, and even in politics. Call Steve now at 866-34-TRUTH, or check him out online at c2atoday.org. And now, with some much-needed cough medicine for the church, here's your host, Steve Noble.
Well, I was looking forward to interviewing Victor Marks, who's, you know, just this big stud horse. And the last time that we had Victor on the show, I think it was like 45 minutes outside of Mosul. And God had used him and his team over there to rescue widows and orphans. And just it's just mind-boggling what God has been doing in Victor's life. But I think we're not going to talk to Victor today. I think we're going to talk to Scout, which is Victor's dog, who is stealing the show. And she's just beautiful. And is she stealing the show since you got here? We're in Nashville at NRB.
No, everywhere. People want pictures with her.
I'm like, yeah, but it's Victor Marks. Yeah, like, whatever.
Yeah.
Just get out of the way.
Let me
get to your dog. We like the dog. Anyway, it's great to see you finally in person.
Thank you. You too.
And great to meet you.
Well, now let me say this
to
your listening audience. When I was in Iraq, you know, between, and we have a home there and all the stuff we were doing, out of every interview I've done, TV, radio, and you're the only one that ever had the moxie to do it live.
Really?
To this day, you hold the record, man. Seriously.
See, that doesn't like, I just want to yell at everybody else and go, that's so lame that people wouldn't be willing to do that. I mean, we just talked about this before we went on the air.
Yeah.
I'm like, pre-recording. That's all.
That's
safe. And our God is bigger than that.
No.
So I don't have a spirit of fear doing live radio. No. I'm with you, bro.
Big respect.
So thank you for saying that. That was great to talk to you. But obviously you're not in Iraq now. So kind of catch us up what's going on over there. And I know you've got some other great ministry things you're doing. So I'm going to make sure we use your time wisely. But take us back there and what you were doing there and what's happened and where it is today.
Yeah, well, we have teams there in place. In country, guys, we have our house. A lot happened where we just were kind of shocked what God was doing. We were on the cutting edge and helping kids that had been orphaned by war or actually being held. So, you know, hats off to the teams we put together, to the people who prayed for us, to the Iraqi Army, the American Coalition. You know, it took a lot of teamwork. And then also reaching kids who were in camps who really struggled with trauma.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of dads are dead. Kids witnessed it. And then just the threat of ISIS being so close, and we were able to develop a tool, a lion and a lamb, that actually has music. It's composition specific to lowering anxiety. So you think about our kids, you know, if they got scared at night and wake up, now think about these kids there who have seen horrific stuff. So we've been able to reach about 25,000 kids so far.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and it works. The hardest thing about handing these things out is we never have enough.
Yeah,
never.
That's right.
We just did 900 in Syria, right on the cutting edge, Kobani and all that, with our associate team, FBR and Dave Eubank. So we're thankful to God. He's given us the privilege to serve there in that capacity. What I will say is the last 3 days in country, the FBI contacted my security team, you know, and just said, hey, ISIS has targeted Victor Marks. That's the chatter right now. That's what we heard. So we had to hide out for 3 days.
Man.
And then bounce. But we were real intentional, knowing what we were doing. And at a certain point, we said, okay, we're going to go from kind of being dark to, and we got interviewed by 16 different TV stations.
Awesome.
And showed my testimony film with the gospel in it at an Iraqi theater.
How about, that's mind-boggling. When did you go over there? Like, how long had you been serving that way?
Yeah, we went in about 6 months, roughly after ISIS hit. And we've just been going back and forth, to where we finally get a house. We have residents, actually.
I know. It's crazy.
I mean, I'm me and my family and some of our people. It's funny because, you know, we're at the, you know, we got through the border.
Yeah.
It's funny going through all the checks. And when you want to enter there, they actually do blood work.
Really?
Oh, yeah. It's
Man. That's pretty bizarre, intense, to say the least. Now, what do you think about the shape of northern Iraq and what's going on in Syria and ISIS? I mean, it's been amazing how much progress there's been in the last year. And by the way, we're talking to Victor Marks, and he's got a lot of different ministries and things that he's working on. Is victormarks.com the best?
I think so.
Just portal to go to
Marks
get to everything else.
Yep.
M-A-R-X. And so how would you describe it now?
Well, believe it or not, it's actually in many ways more unstable, because when ISIS was there, you know, everybody worked together for common good to fight one enemy. But now that they've laid down their guns, and let me say this, I mean, we were on some of the first pushes and pumps into Mosul, regaining territory, I had a small town there, and I'll tell you right now, there weren't tons of ISIS fighters laying around dead. They were gone.
They were gone.
So they dropped their weapons and they blended in. So they're still there, but they're going to wait. And unfortunately, when that died down, then the sectarianism popped up, then the tribal feud, and now between Baghdad and Kurdistan, it's very tense.
Back to business as usual.
Yeah, and even worse because the Erbil airport is shut down by Baghdad.
Baghdad shut them down.
Yep.
Yeah, and most people don't realize this consternation between the Kurds in Kurdistan and Baghdad in Iraq, which has been going on for a while.
Yep.
It's basically like kind of the American Revolution originally.
Yeah.
Where you got the big bad crown, and then you got these separatists over here.
That's a good way to look at it. It's, and you know, believe me, there's greed, there's injustice in every camp. There's no doubt.
Right.
But for us, you know, we really try to be friends with everybody on every side, because our goal is to reach kids and help try to change the next generation.
I mean, how did they react? Because you've had face-to-face encounters with ISIS guys.
Yep.
And they're not all, you say kids, there's ISIS kids. So tell us about that, your interaction with actual members of ISIS.
Well, you know, I think about people who've told me, man, we just got to kill all the ISIS fighters. And I go, really? How about a 13-year-old? How about a 10-year-old that was captured 3 years earlier and he was with ISIS? And we were part of the recovery team. When we found him, he had taken shrapnel through his back, into his stomach in the Iraqi army. I mean, it turned into, instead of a bad guy, it turned into a rescue of a kid. And, I mean, the goodness of God and people working together, he's now in Canada with his mom.
Wow.
And if they look on our social media pages, the difference is unbelievable.
That's incredible. And that's the reformed power, the reformation power, the resurrection power of Jesus Christ alive and well in Iraq in the middle of that mess. We're talking to Victor Marks, victormarks.com, M-A-R-X. This is Steve Noble live from Nashville at NRB. We got a lot more to talk to when we come back right after this. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, Call to Action Radio, live from Nashville at the National Religious Broadcasters Convention, talking to, well, a newer friend, but an eternal friend, nevertheless, Victor Marks, who just spent a lot of time. I mean, his whole story is wild, so it's just, you got to, God's grace over and over and over again. You got to go to his website, check it out for yourself. Many of you might know him because you've seen him disarm people, like the fastest guy in the world to take a gun out of your hand. So that might, for a lot of us, I think that's the first time I saw that.
Right.
But there's so many other things going on with Victor and the way God is using him. VictorMarks.com is the website, and we were talking about his time in Iraq and everything his team's been doing there. And every time I ask you about that, Victor, and I appreciate this about you, and this is what we keep hearing about Billy Graham, you never talk about yourself. It's always your team. It's always the mission. It's always the people. And that's a good reminder to me, and I think to everybody else as well. So thank you for your humility despite all your ability and everything that's happened.
I don't really have the energy for image maintenance, brother. I'm just too old for that.
<That's>
I've been
awesome.
Hit too many times.
Yeah, I love that. That's so great. Thank you for that. And victormarks.com is the website. So you're back now from Iraq, and God has put something else on your heart. That isn't new, but tell us about this, what you're focusing on now.
Well, you know what? About a year ago, in the midst of all this, I felt like God was saying he wanted to use us to rebuild the persecuted church of Iraq. And honestly, man, my faith about this, my wife has great faith.
Yeah.
I'm a pretty small guy on that. And I said, rebuild the church of Iraq. okay, so that means, one, if we're successful, we're going to be hated more. This is good. And so we started small, just helping, you know, an individual pastor. And all of a sudden, this has opened up to where we've really been invited into the center of where Christians, the largest cities, villages, areas, the Nineveh Plain, and they're looking to us for leadership and hope to help them come back, to be resettled, and to provide security. So, you know, if your listeners will just remember us, you know, in the near future, I'll be in Iraq visiting with the Prime Minister and presenting a package that is actually inviting them to help support the work we're doing because they need it. And some of your listeners aren't going to get this, but, man, listen to me. Iraq knows they're out of balance when it comes time for Christians. I mean, senior Islamic leaders and imams and politicians say, this country was Christian before us, and we need them back.
They openly say that.
They do. They say Christians in Iraq is like the scent to a flower. We must have them back. And, of course, there's plenty of persecution waiting in ISIS, but that's what we're doing. And I believe because God's really raised up an army of prayer folks that follow us. I think we're at 270,000 people on Facebook. Yeah. And then our videos, they estimate it's over 100 million views.
That's crazy, man.
It's beyond, right? How do you, you know.
How do you kind of.
Sixth grade was the best 8 years of my life.
Well, one of the things, I was in a meeting yesterday, and the guy said he was meeting with a bunch of Hollywood movers and shaker types, and this one uber liberal Hollywood Jewish woman. Says to him, he's the only Christian in the room. She said to him, why aren't the Christians in America doing anything about all these persecuted Christians
there
over the Middle East?
No. Boom.
And a probably agnostic Jewish liberal woman in Hollywood schooling the church in America.
If that's not the truth. Hey.
That makes me want to vomit.
Well, listen, I had a senior Islamic leader that brought me to a group of persecuted Christians. And he goes, these are your people. He goes, why aren't American Christians helping? And I said, honestly, in large part, most are fearful. And I said, you know, that's what kept me back. So I said, we're going to activate the body of Christ. We're going to educate them. And then we're going to give them a venue to help through reaching kids, through helping those who are traumatized. And now our next big phase, we're going to build an orphanage. We're going to bring widows in and children, and then we're going to help start to resettle Christians
in the Nineveh Plains. All right, so let me throw this at you, you know, since it's live radio.
Yep.
For the last several years, I've really felt God leaning on me that I need to identify a ministry that I can partner with, and then as the show continues to grow, we're going live in San Francisco next week. We're in 8 or 9 states,
man.
Now. And God is just so good, but I want to talk to you about funneling the resources of the show and the audience, which, you know, I'm not Eric Metaxas or whatever, but who cares? God likes to use small things and just drive people to get a part of it. Listen, we don't have a resource problem in the body of Christ.
No, we don't.
We have an allocation problem.
Well,
and the problem is most of the allocation is in my quarter. I take pretty good care of myself.
Yep.
I take pretty good care of my church. But, you know, you say fear is something that holds us back in America from caring about our brothers and sisters and even non-Christians in the Middle East.
Of course.
I don't think it's fear.
No.
I think it's apathy.
Well, you would say that.
I think it's apathy.
And that is
not
truth.
The opposite of love is not hate. It's apathy.
Yeah,
it's to have the ability to do something and then to choose not to do something.
Well, once they hear
that's
and
worse.
They know and there's an opportunity to help, then, man, they're some people are going to be held real accountable before God Almighty when they stand there because he said, I entrusted this to you. I gave you the opportunity, and you still didn't.
I mean, I've been there. I've shared the gospel with people in northern Iraq, but I don't think I've put any of my dollars towards it.
Yep.
And shame on me. And it's easy to go, hey, listen, I got a moral proximity. The Catholic Church is good at teaching on this. That I'm held most responsible for what's closest to me.
Right.
But I also, I've been there, I've seen it. And once you have knowledge, you're culpable.
Yeah.
Aren't you? Don't you think that?
No, for sure. It's like one good American Christian told me, he said, man, I think all we can do is kill all the Muslims over there.
Jeez.
And I looked at him and said, brother, lightly, I said, when you hold one of their kids, it all changes. Last night here, a very well-known Middle Eastern gal who's a Christian, who's on Fox all the time, and we sat down, and a small meeting turned into 3 hours, and then she was hugging me, crying, saying, thank you for not forgetting our people.
Man.
She said, my people, and then she said, our people. And she goes, can you please do your social media? We said, we'll do our social media to the Nineveh Plains,
yeah,
letting them know, hang on, don't give up.
Yeah.
Don't give up. It's hard. You're intense. You know, in the winter, it's freezing. In the summer, it's 120 degrees. We're coming. The American church is coming to help.
Man.
So thank you for being willing to be, yeah, a part of this, man.
So let's talk about it later when we get a chance. Not here because it's just a zoo, but we'll catch up later. I'd like to do at least one show a month, and then just kind of inform us, call us to action, give us something to do, give us somewhere to give. And listen, I'd rather you guys give money to Victor and what's going on over there than give money to get me on another radio station. Seriously. Mm. I mean, the radio ministry is important. What we do is important. God's shown me that, but
He'll provide.
That's and that. See, I've got that scarcity Christian ghetto mindset. Like, it's a zero-sum game, and if I don't get it here, it's impossible to get it there. It's ridiculous.
Well, let me just share this. Our budget was $2.1 million, and what we did for that was unreal.
Yeah.
I mean, unreal.
Just crazy.
$3 million came in last year. So God's in. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. What are you worried about, Victor?
Yeah,
who do you think you're working for?
I'm not anymore. It's exactly right.
That's awesome. VictorMarks.com is the website. Victor, thanks so much for dropping in today, and we will make this a regular thing.
Man, appreciate your friendship.
Absolutely.
And you are a warrior.
Amen, bro. Okay, friends, we'll be right back with Kerry Summers, who's the president of Museum of the Bible. And I just sat down with Steve Green yesterday. We'll hear about that. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble live from the National Religious Broadcasters Convention here in Nashville, Tennessee. This place is a zoo. That's why it sounds crazy in the background. And you guys know that I've had the pleasure of partnering with the Museum of the Bible. I was there, actually did the very first live radio broadcast there in May of last year from the Nazareth exhibit, and had to have a hard hat on over this whole contraption, Kerry. And we had to take the plastic stuff out of the hard hat in order to get it to fit over the headset. But that was the first time I did the show from the Museum of the Bible. Then I was there opening week. I was there 2 weeks ago, and I'll be back on March 13th and every month for the rest of the year. But Kerry Summers is the president of the Museum of the Bible, has quite a history himself. And I'm almost done with his book, Lifting Up the Bible, the story behind Museum of the Bible, which is an amazing story. And my interaction with you guys, Kerry, and thanks for taking the time. I know you guys are buried time-wise. But the Passages exhibit in Charlotte, right, like 5 or 6 years ago.
Wow, that's right.
Which is when I met Steve Green for the first time, and I did my show. I was on Saturdays at the time and did the show from the exhibit. And, man, what a wild ride you've been on.
That has been. That was, that was at the old IBM building, if I remember right, in Charlotte. And those artifacts that were there, which were 450 of them, they ended up all in Washington now. So you got a preview of what's really a core of Washington.
Well, I had just finished taking a New Testament class at Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary. I'm almost done with my master's in ethics. And we had just learned about P39.
Right.
So I'm walking through that exhibit,
and there it is.
And I'm like, come on, no, really, that can't possibly be there.
Yeah.
And then, don't you guys have the Martin Luther letter?
Yes.
That he wrote. When did he write that?
He wrote that the night before he thought he was going to be, could be put to death. Certainly he was anticipating being excommunicated from the church, which he did. But he's really more concerned that they would just put him to death then. And he wrote this somewhat as his last will and testimony, really. We have it. It's the only one that exists. It's really one of those special items that if you don't know exist in the museum, you will walk right by it or you're never going to see it. It's a big museum, so I can understand that. But we have a lot of those things like that are just real treasures.
430,000 square feet, right?
Yeah, it's a lot to walk around.
So for you, you know, I have a long and accomplished career. To be asked to get involved with the Museum of the Bible, did you have a sense of the enormity of this task and the enormity of the blessing and what God was doing here right at the beginning when they pulled you in?
You know, yes and no. It sounds like an odd answer. But Bill Bright, 20-plus years ago, gave me the idea that I should retire from what I was doing, and he knew I could, and start an organization that would build things that would invite people to come that was about the Bible, about God himself, who would never set foot into a church.
Wow.
And that was 22 years ago. And we prayed about it. We started it, called the Nehemiah Group back then. And again, it's been a wild ride, because every day for the last 22 years, sounds odd, there has been something crazy good, as we ask God every day. God, do something crazy good today.
Amen.
And he has. So to say that this deal with the Museum of the Bible, which came up, I was just trying to help the Greens out with some of their items, create a traveling exhibit.
Yeah.
They said, man, we don't know how to run this thing. What you built is fantastic, but why don't you try to run this thing? And so they said, we know you're doing other things. That's fine. And then my wife and I prayed about it, and I told my family, her, my kids, grandkids, that this is probably the biggest opportunity we will have in this generation to impact the world, literally impact the world, put the Bible back into the center of conversation.
Yeah.
Was this project. And that's not belittling anything else anybody else is doing. But when you put $500 million in a museum 2 blocks from the U.S. Capitol and you invite the world to come, and they come, then you literally can put the Bible back into the center of conversation. I told them I will probably die doing this. I could do that. There's heavy spiritual warfare involved in this thing. And it has been. But you know what? God is honored every single second of that.
Well, that probably wasn't newsflash, Kerry. There's spiritual warfare coming. I sat down with Steve and Jackie yesterday for a half an hour, and I asked them about that question, and I was going to ask you that question.
Yeah.
And reading most of Lifting Up the Bible and the story and all the different challenges you ran into. And what was it, Dallas, New York, and D.C. in terms of what you were looking at?
That's right.
And then running into water. This is a historic building. Yeah. All these things.
Right.
Did any of you guys, and this is the – were you shocked at the size, the immensity, and the diversity of this team?
It was a team that I brought together. The requirement was that I believe time is money and big projects. So you got them as fast as you can. We negotiated a deal with the largest contractor in the United States where it would be 24/7. Three shifts, no overtime.
No overtime. I read that. That was brilliant.
Three shifts.
Yeah.
And then also every design firm that worked on this are all competitors. There are six of them. They battle daily for the jobs throughout the world.
Yeah.
Disney, Universal,
others. Yeah, the big stuff.
They all had theme park background or museum background, but they had to have both. Because they had to have the theme park, because you have to build on time, on budget, on fast, and you get it right. You have to be creative, edgy, or you're not going to get in the job.
That's right.
And in the museum, there are certain regulations, some things you do. Yeah. You have to be careful. And so we brought all six of these together, and very competitors. And the key to the success, which I put in the book, was day one, literally, we took them all to Israel.
Yeah, that's a great story.
And for 10 days, they walked around Israel. None of them had ever been there. And they understood exactly then what we were after. And it was more than them. It was more than their competitiveness. It was more than me. It was more than Museum of the Bible. They really realized they were doing something that truly is going to impact the world. And it was all about him, not about them.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's what changed the whole project. And it truly is the reason we were able to do what we did.
I bet you guys this is the closest any group of human beings has ever come to experiencing what Noah went through.
Well, we do have a Noah exhibit in there. But I love going there and just listening to the cries of the cows. You know, like, I understand that cry. Yeah.
What was one of the more difficult periods of the build of the Museum of the Bible in terms of you and overseeing it all and all the pressure on you, in terms of something that you ran into that was so daunting?
You know, the building itself, we were surprised with asbestos, even though we'd paid for all these stages of investigation.
Right.
And it delayed us about 90 days, and we made it up. But that was that could have been it hurt our,
Sure.
our energy. We got going, and bam, we just stopped. So that was one. Then the other was, we're thick-skinned, and if you're in this business and you're in the business, you understand this well, that sometime the media was horribly evil.
Yeah.
Making
and that's not an understatement.
No, it was.
That's not conservative versus liberal.
It was just pure evil.
Yeah,
pure evil. Commenting on things that we had never done. Commenting on things we were going to do, which I have no idea. Commenting on a museum they never had been in, even on our hard hat tour, they became the experts. They threw it out as pure trash. They sold their stories because of it. Media picked it up. This is trashy. They're beating these guys up, these evangelicals. Let's buy the story and put it on our front page. And they did.
Man.
And now, in November, December, we had over 4,000 articles written, video, websites, And if all those listeners, watchers, readers watch, read, so 8.5 billion people saw the media that we got, over 4,000 in November and December. Amazing how it got real quiet.
Yeah.
Because now they had to come in. And now when they want to write the trash, the public say, wait a minute, time out.
Yeah,
guys.
Sorry.
Oh, we've been there. You're dead.
Yeah.
And it got real quiet. And so the biggest disappointment to me and challenge, it was not necessarily a challenge, disappointment, on how to sell a story. And I'm not picking on the media, but to sell a story, how deep and dirty you dig and create lies.
Yeah.
To sell a story that maybe you got $200 to sell the story.
Right. Isn't that amazing?
It's just beyond me.
Well, besides human depravity, which is obviously a huge factor in that, you also have I don't want to sound over-spiritualizing this, but, you know, the forces of darkness on a project like this, three blocks away. I mean, I'm looking at doing radio there, and there's the Capitol. There's the Washington Monument.
Right.
And the most incredible museum ever built, the most high-tech museum ever built, and we're going to talk about that in the last segment, is right there. And you just knew Satan is not enjoying this.
He's not. And, you know, as you mentioned, this first book, Lifting Up the Bible, I have a second one that's coming out. And it deals with the Nehemiah principles that we used from the book of Nehemiah to build this museum. It's 10 chapters, you know, 145-page standard fare kind of thing. I put it on hold. I'm rewriting two chapters now because I've taught on spiritual warfare for 30 years. I've written material on spiritual warfare, but I have never, ever in my life ever experienced the degree that we have on this project. It is beyond, it's the power of that is beyond anything you can describe. I described it was a vision given to me that if a nitrogen bomb went off, an atom bomb went off, any kind of bomb, it was a tiny fracture of the power of the evilness that exists today that Satan combines. And I could see this. I could see the only way you were going to win is God had to win for you.
Yeah.
So I'm rewriting two chapters in this book to explain the depths of what real power of evil. But, it's just like the Holocaust. People write about the Holocaust. The great story about the Holocaust, it was banned, burned, debated, the Torah, the Jewish people, and today thriving like crazy.
Thriving like crazy.
That's the last chapter in the book is, with all this evilness going on, God still wins, and he's winning today.
That's awesome. Lifting Up the Bible, the story behind Museum of the Bible. We're talking to Kerry Summers, who's the president of the Museum of the Bible. I'll be back up there next stop March 13th.
Yeah, come on.
So I have a bunch of other questions for you. We're going to talk about the technology when we come back. Talking about Museum of the Bible, open now, Washington, D.C. You don't have any excuses. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble live in Nashville, National Religious Broadcasters Convention, which I never really, I think it should be National Christian Broadcasters Convention, but there's other people here, and so it's kind of all over the board, but great to be here. Kerry Summers, who I've been hoping and praying that I could sit down with one of these days, because I got his book when I was at the museum grand opening week back in November, and I'm really close to finishing it. I'll finish it before I get on the plane tomorrow. Lifting Up the Bible, the story behind Museum of the Bible, which really takes you through this whole remarkable God-filled, miraculous story of how this 430,000 square foot monument to the goodness of God and his word is right there in the nation's capital. And I've been drawn to it, Kerry, since I saw the Passages exhibit in Charlotte 5 or 6 years ago. And like we were talking off the air on the break, I think for most of us Christians in America, 98, 99% of us will never get to the Holy Land. Most Christians can't afford to do that. But if they get to Washington, D.C. and get to the Museum of the Bible, I seriously think that's going to be the closest they can ever get to that level of impact on your your walk with Christ.
It is. I'm going to share this only to emphasize what you just said. I've been in Israel 35 years. I've made 111 trips to Israel. I've had a residence there for 20 years. And we designed this museum for a lot of reasons, but one of them was for exactly what you just said. If you go to Israel, I coined a term years ago, you will never be the same. It's now become part of the language of the museum, of the industry, of tourism industry. But we designed this museum knowing that only a tiny fraction of the people ever walking in would ever go to Israel. But it was so it changed my life 35 years ago going to Israel, and I wanted to have that same impact on other people's lives. So we built things in that museum to the best we could. They said, yeah, it's not Israel, but let me just show you what it sounds like, smells like. Here's what a rural synagogue is. Here's what a mikveh looks like. Here's what they eat. Here's this is how they lived in the first century. Everything that we could so that at least now what's happening is groups now, we had 100 the other day come through, spent a day in the museum, got on a plane at Dulles, flew to Israel. And they said, and I just talked to them yesterday from here, from the NRB. They call me, and they said that was one of the greatest things we've ever done. Because when we arrived into Israel, it was like we knew where we were.
We
knew what to feel.
Somewhat familiar.
Exactly.
Isn't that amazing?
It's a lot of fun.
That's amazing.
So hopefully people will come. And not only enjoy all the great manuscripts and all, because that'll take you days and days and days to go through, but enjoy the atmosphere, the culture that we've created there. It's different than any museum. In fact, some people say, well, it's really not a museum. Well, that's true, too. It's really not a themed attraction. Well, that's true, too. But it's a living experience that we want you just to dig in, engage, interact. It's built for that.
Well, to me, it's like Disney mixed with the Bible, mixed with the Met in New York City.
Exactly.
And then, boom, out pops Museum of the Bible. Because it comes at you. It's almost overwhelming.
Well, the Met is one of my examples. I love the Met.
Yeah.
I love what they do there. They've got great stuff, as we say. And all we said, let's take it up and let's make it so engaging that, look, this item may shoot way over your head.
Yeah,
like it's this, and it's the Greek, and this, and the Greek, and Hebrew, da 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 da, and you're just looking at it like a cow looking at the opening gate,
ivory tower stuff.
Yeah,
or
what do
whatever.
I do? So, but let's now put it into a cultural setting and say, look, this is what was going on. These handheld devices that were introduced in March the 12th through all the museums.
Oh, so excited!
Electronic
for that.
Docents, and it says, look. Okay, here's the item, but don't get hung up on the item. Here's the culture. Here's the political setting, the political setting, the historical setting. Here's what was happening. Here's why people were giving their lives for the Bible during that period. Now, here it was. Oh, and by the way, here is a Tyndale Bible that has his handwritten notes in it.
Jeez,
but it wasn't the Tyndale Bible you came to see. We hope you came to understand what God was doing during that period of time.
Yep.
Then you will walk away and you will read the Bible totally different thereafter.
Well, I think most people, and I used to be one of these people, we like to think our faith is built on the rock. We're told that it should be built on the rock. That, in fact, of course, theologically it is.
Right.
But I think for most people, when it comes to the Bible, the veracity of the Bible, the authenticity of the Bible, the accuracy of the Bible, the historicity of the Bible, most people have never gone down those roads.
Right.
So they don't want to. They're not ready to defend it.
Right.
And they don't necessarily put all their weight on it themselves.
Right.
But when you start going down this road, this is what happened to me as I went to passages and then I started taking classes at the seminary. I'm like, you know what? I'm not some fool that drank the purple juice. I'm actually pretty smart. The atheist, the person that rejects the Bible, has drank the purple juice and is making a foolish decision.
Yeah.
I'm making a stinking smart decision.
Yeah.
This is rational.
You know, there's a Caribbean song out. It's out there right now. And it's, we say we stand on the rock. Well, this song says we hide under the rock, okay? And we do, you know, we do. Yeah. We say, oh, my goodness, oh, I hope they don't ask me about my faith. Oh, no, they're going to. Oh, no, how do they want me to explain Jesus? Oh, how do I do that? I can't do that. So when you get into this museum, we give you ammo, at whatever faith you are. And by the way, we have a gigantic Jewish attendees there. We have a rabbi who's writing a Torah scroll there. And we find the same thing. Jews come in and say, yeah, man, I didn't know that about the Jewish faith. I didn't know about the orthodoxy that way and that way. And they're learning, too. And we have a huge contingency of both Protestants and Catholics coming in. And they're all learning something so that you can talk to people without being under the rock.
Right.
You could stand on the rock actually have an intelligent conversation
with
people.
That's so cool. All right, let's talk about technology. So may I be so bold as to ask, what was the price tag on all the technology that went into this
museum? $42 million.
And so did you guys know from the get-go, we're going to make this thing the most off-the-hook museum on the planet?
You know, boy, that's a great question. It's going to sound egotistical, but we did. I mean, we worked – I've been to museums my whole life. I'm a museum goer. I love museums. And I always, and everything that we put in that museum was to get rid of my frustrations. Because you'd walk in and say, oh, how do you get this? And, oh, it, you know, it's too big. Where do I start? Well, I don't know. Here's a map. Just do the best you can. And I said, man, we got to stop that. So let's create these electronic docents that you can key in how much time, your interest. It knows where you are. Every 4 inches you take, every 4 inches, it knows where
it
you're
updates.
At. It knows how much time you're spending in front of XYZ, and it will tell you, Steve, if you don't move on, you are not going to get finished with this tour that you just
because it says USA. I want to see this, that, and the other thing. I'm here for 4 hours.
That's it.
And it takes you through.
It takes you through.
And if I'm there with my family or a group, and now I can communicate with them, right?
And you don't have to find them. 50% of some museums' time is spent by surveys. It says that we 50% of the time is spent trying to find the other party. And so we said, hey, let's solve that.
That's
look, I took six Israelis to see the 9/11 exhibit in New York.
Oh, man.
I spent truly 75% of my time trying to find them. They're like little kids. And so I said, we can stop that. So here you have a tablet. You know where your kids are. And by the way, they can walk with you because they have their own track, and it's a treasure hunt.
Yeah. Wow.
They have to figure
wow,
out.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Same stuff you're seeing, but they have a whole different motive of why they're keying things in. Because they get a prize at the end of the day
that's
when they
so
turn
cool.
it back in.
And there's multiple languages, right? Because you've got
kind of
enhanced reality.
10 languages.
And so how does that work? When somebody's walking through and they speak Spanish.
Yeah, they're on a Spanish track. And let's say that you think you know Spanish, like I do. I think I know Spanish. I could turn it on Spanish anytime I want to and listen.
Wow.
And then flip it back to English. And that's throughout the whole museum.
Now, what about all the displays and all the digital stuff that's all in English?
Yeah, but it's all on this handheld device in your language.
And it just changes it.
It just changes it, yeah.
That's just incredible.
Yeah, it's crazy stuff.
How are people responding? Are people responding the way you expected them to respond? Or are they responding beyond what you expect?
You know what, we do surveys of our statistically accurate surveys of guests who come, and I found out in the theme park world that you don't do them when you're leaving the front gate because everything is good. Oh, it was great. My kids had a great day. And then 2 weeks later, mom gets home from a theme park and says, you know, those restrooms were dirty. You know, this was this. So I always found out the most accurate comments you're going to get after they get home. So we send out a survey, e-survey. One of the questions we ask is, how did the museum make you feel? Now, when I'm short on time and it's a 92 pages worth of comments back,
man.
I look at one question, that question. The number one response that we have is, it gives me hope.
Wow.
Now, this is across the board. These are not all Americans. They certainly are not all Christians at all. And the number one answer is, it gives me hope. And you know what? If you think about it, no matter what faith background you are, what are you looking for? We are all looking for hope.
Same thing.
Now, and we know there's stability of hope and the longevity of hope rests in one thing, and that's the Bible.
Amen.
And so when they come there, and it's very odd people who give us these responses, they give a little bit of background who they are. It's all about, I feel hope. And that's we did not count on that,
yeah.
to be honest. We thought we'd say, man, this is the greatest artifacts
right.
I've ever seen.
I love the impact floor. I love the history floor. I love this particular
or these
exhibit.
Handheld items. Wow, this
yeah, those are awesome.
But the hope. Number one thing gives me hope.
You know what I would love to do as a radio guy is I'd want to start calling these people and say, okay, tell me what you mean by hope.
Sure.
Well, how did that happen? Now, what I'm doing strategically every time I come up, and I did it last time, I got a buddy that studied at Moody. I got another buddy that's a pastor, and I brought him with me.
Yeah.
So we all go through the museum during the day, and then I put him on with me. I've had guests from the museum, of course, but then I put them on with me a couple segments during the show, getting their raw first reaction.
Right.
And these are mature believers. And I'm going to bring some immature believers with me, too. My kids were on the show the week of November 11th or whatever that
right.
was. And to hear them talk, I'll send it to you. I'll get your email. I'll send you a copy of it. But my kids at 16 and 12, they I'm like, that's so profound. You sound like your mom.
Yeah.
I was shocked at the depth of their response
right.
to 4.5 hours
right.
walking around there. And right. mature Christians, too. It's just one right after another.
Saturday, a week ago, we're live today, and so this was 4 days ago. I had a Jewish family in who I knew. They brought their 3 kids, and the mom was very honest. This morning we said, hey, we're in Washington. This is like day number 3. We're going to end our day by going to the Museum of the Bible. And she said, the kid said, what? Really, Mom?
Yeah.
Really?
What happened after? We're almost done. But
so anyway, they came. And then after they were there for 3 hours, the kids did not want to leave. These are little kids. I mean, they're teenagers.
Yeah, yeah.
Jewish, secular. and they could not get enough. They did not want to leave the Museum
of the
Bible. There you
go. And that's why you put so much sweat, blood, and tears into this. And God's going to keep using it. Kerry, what a pleasure to have you on. Thanks for being
here. Thank you, man. It was great.
You're very welcome. Kerry Summers, Museum of the Bible. Get there as soon as possible, or I will track you down and come yell at you myself. I love you guys. God willing, I'll talk to you again real soon.